Good morning and welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us, listening on WILL Radio, WILL AM. You also might be watching. We're webcasting this morning on our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. And we're glad to have you here. Harriet Williamson is the producer, and Kyle Croft, Kyle Mabry is at the controls this morning. We're happy to have here again on a show a candidate, and this is part of a series that we're doing with candidates that will be competing in Illinois' March primary. And we will be talking with candidates for Congress and also candidates for the State House. And this morning, our guest is State Senator Shane Cultra. He is a Republican. He is seeking his party's spot on the ballot in the new 53rd district of the Illinois State Senate. It is a big district and includes a lot of towns, and I'll just mention a few. Dwight, Pontiac, Eureka, Paxton, Hoopston, Watseka, all of Normal, part of Bloomington, stretches from Bloomington on the one side all the way over to the Illinois-Indiana border. We had his opponent in the primary, State Representative Jason Berkman. He was on the show last week. These programs are all archived, will be archived on our website. So if you want to go back and listen to that, you certainly can. Currently, Senator Cultra does indeed represent a district called 53rd. So that's the old 53rd. The one he's running in is the new 53rd. He grew up in Onarga, went to Michigan State, where he studied agricultural technology and landscape and nursery management. In fact, he's been involved in the operation of his family business, the Onarga Nursery, since he was a boy. He's also has been a member of the Iroquois County Board and served as chairman in his last term. And we're really pleased that he could be here this morning to talk with us. We invite the candidates on the show so people who will be voting in the primary can talk with them, and we hope we'll be informed when they go to the polls. So if you have a question for our guest, 333-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free if it would be a long-distance call. And you can also go online to our website. That's willtalk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here.
Dave, thanks for having me on.
We know that the state has some serious budget issues. The governor's going to give his budget message tomorrow, so we'll have a better idea what he's got in mind. But we certainly know that he's talking about a 9% across-the-board cut in almost everything. He's talking about a small increase for education. We have a couple of big problems that the state needs to deal with, Medicaid and pension. So I want to talk about those things specifically. But just as a way of starting, how do you approach this problem that we have now with having to cut almost everything?
Well, first of all, you got to remember who's driving the bus and who the co-pilots are. This is 9 years of Democratic failure. They've been driving the bus for the state of Illinois since 2003. They've controlled the governor's office, the House, and the Senate. And they've made a lot of bad choices. They continue to spend more money than they take in, even after a record tax increase, which increases the tax revenue to the state of over $7 billion. They continue to spend more money than they take in, and it's got to stop. I think it's ironic that 2 years ago, Bill Brady, when running for governor, mentioned a 10% cut across the board, and he was ridiculed by many different parties, saying that was unrealistic. And now here, 2 years later, his opponent is recommending almost the same thing.
Well, let me ask you real quick, just since you touched on the tax cut, this was something that passed the General Assembly. No Republicans voted for this. It's set to expire in 2015. Some people think that it should expire sooner. Do you think that it should be phased out sooner than 2015?
Well, I think you have to be realistic. If you're not going to cut anything, if you're going to increase spending every year, there's no way you can even do away with what's supposed to. I mean, just a small portion of it is actually supposed to go away in a few years. It's not the whole cut. Part of the cut is permanent. I think in 2024 or something, I think it's supposed to go down a little bit more. So, this tax cut, the way we're spending, there's no way they're going to be able to get rid of it.
Well, let's talk about the two biggest things that anybody seems to be talking about. The one would be Medicaid, the other would be pension. So first, Medicaid. Now, what we're told is that the governor is going to call for a $2.7 billion cut in Medicaid. And this is a program that provides services for close to 3 million people in the state. So people who've looked at this and said, well, there's really three things you can do. You can change the rules to reduce the number of people who are eligible. You can cut back on the services that you provide. And it's true that Illinois provides some things that other states don't. And you can reduce the reimbursements for the health care providers. Now, that was something the governor has proposed before, but the General Assembly turned him down. So looking at those, if those are the three options, what do you do to cut the cost of the program?
Well, first of all, this is a mandated program from the federal government. So I think you would go back and you look what actually do we have to provide and what are we providing beyond what is called for. And I think you'll find out that income levels in Illinois are higher than what the federal mandate is. I think you'll find that we offer more services than what they do. And as far as the reimbursements, I think all three of those could be in play. But the reimbursements to the doctors and the hospitals, I think, probably already is below Social Security. So I don't know how much room you have to play there. But I think you have to look at eligibility. I think you have to look at fraud. I think, you know, if someone moves to Illinois, are they immediately eligible for Medicaid? If someone is here on a visa, are they eligible for Medicaid? So, I think there's no doubt that we have to begin looking at income eligibility. I think if we go to like a copay, maybe that would help they'd be less reluctant or they'd be more reluctant to use the services if they knew that it cost them a little bit something up front.
Just to go stay with the second for a second with the idea of cutting the payments to providers, would you approve something like that? Or it sounds like you're saying that there's not much more that can be squeezed out of there. But what if the governor said, all right, I want to cut payments to providers? Do you think the General Assembly would be any more eager to do that than they were last year?
Well, I think, first of all, the governor has to be realistic on what he's talking about. And, you know, you just can't introduce plans without having any consultation with anybody else. And that's, I think, what happened last year. He introduced some things that he hadn't even discussed with his own party leaders. So, you know, he has to sit down and be a leader and bring everybody to the table. And I would support all three of these. I think it depends on how you do it and the devil's in the details.
Well, are there, if you look at the services that are provided, and there are a lot of things that are provided, things like dental care, prescription drugs, some in-home care, and so forth, what would you cut?
Well, I think, first of all, in-home care saves us a lot of money. So that's something that I think, rather than cutting, you almost look like you'd have to step up, especially in rural areas. The services are so underprovided that if you can keep someone in their home, rather than going to a nursing home, you're saving the state a lot of money. So I think that's an area where it would be hard for me to support any cuts. I think state institutions, I think it costs a lot more money to put someone in a state institution than what can be provided for elsewhere. So that's something that, I think we can look at. But, I can come up with a list of things. Anybody can. But it's the governor. It's the Democratic leaders. They're going to have to put forth the package and explain to their members and to the rest of us why they're headed in the direction they're headed. And they certainly haven't done that very well. They haven't worked together in the past. Hopefully things will be better this year.
Well, it sounds as if you're saying that one of your, aside from possibly cutting services, one of your best opportunities to reduce the cost of the program is to reduce the number of people who are covered. How much do you think, and who really are you talking about, possibility of cutting off?
Well, I think you look at income levels. There's a poverty level, and I think we provide services for people that are way above poverty level, and it depends on the program as to what that level is. I think if you look at all kids that Blagojevich started, you can be making as much as $80,000 and still participate in that program. So I think that's something we need to certainly look at. Some people making $80,000 shouldn't be subsidized by the state.
Our guest in this part of Focus is Shane Coulter. He's a member of the Illinois State Senate, and he will be competing for his party's spot on the ballot in the March primary in the new 53rd Senate district. He now represents the 53rd. This is a new district, the result of changes made in the lines, how they were drawn. He will be competing against State Representative Jason Berrickman in the primary, and he was on the show last week. So you can go to the website and you can hear that. All of the candidate interviews we're doing will be archived, and so they'll be there on the website. You can listen anytime you're ready. Questions here are welcome, too. I have somebody to talk with, and the number is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll talk with the caller here in Belgium, our line number 4. Hello.
Hello, and good morning. Sir, I have a question here, and it's not pointed directly at you, sir. But it's how we're dealing with this particular problem. I am not exactly in your district. I'm slightly below it, or your new district. Over the years, these problems that Illinois have had didn't start with the last administration, didn't start with the administration before that. It goes back into, 70s or 80s, when you stopped funding the pensions and stopped doing a lot of things that both sides of the political arena have been partial to. Why is it that we always hear politicians blame the other side and not say, hey, we're all in this mess together, and let's work together to get out of it and get something done?
Well, I think that's certainly a great way to look at things. But we can talk about what we'd like to do, but you have to remember who's in the driver's seat and who directs the agenda. As a minority party, we can certainly propose a lot of different ideas, but we can't set the agenda. We don't have control over what bills are brought forth to committees, what committees they go to. The ruling party does that. There's a lot of good ideas that we had last year that Republicans brought forward. Workers' comp, let's just take that for an example. Business in this state is, because of workers' comp, is uncompetitive with our surrounding areas. Indiana, workers' comp is probably half of what it is here in Illinois. So as Republicans, we brought forth a bill that had causation in it. And causation just means that you have to have some relationship to having the injury caused at work. It had to be a contributing factor to the injury in order to receive benefits. And all the workers' comp bill did that we passed last year simply just cut the rates that we pay the doctors. And so it really didn't, the whole root of the problem wasn't addressed. And it wasn't because as Republicans or and we had, I think there was one Democrat voted on our bill, but it was defeated. And I'm willing to work with anyone that wants to help to get this state out of its mess, but there's different approaches. It seems like the party in power wants to keep increasing spending, growing government, and we've come to a point where we just can't afford it anymore. Mm. But I think anyone in Springfield, I think we realize that there's a huge problem, and that we're ready to work with the other side, but it has to be reasonable proposals. We're as Republicans, we're not interested in growing government anymore. We can't afford it. Now, there's a lot of things that would be great to do if we had money, but we have to realize we've been spending more money than we've been taking in every year for the last 9 years. And so it's sometime you've got to draw the line in the sand and say, you know what, we've got to quit spending more than we take in. And I thought that would be last year. It didn't happen. We're still spending more money. Hopefully this year we can do it.
I don't want to belabor the point, but I guess I think that there are people who would say that, particularly when you're talking about the problems with the pension system and the failure of the state to support it, that that's something that goes back a long way. And it's something that you can say happened under Republican governors. And at times when there, at least in one of the chambers, there was it was controlled by Republicans. I don't know when the last time there was a Republican majority in the House was, but there within living memory, there's been a Republican majority in the Senate. Are you willing to concede that, in fact, some of the problems we have, particularly with pensions, that the Republican Party should have a share of the blame?
Well, I think Republicans controlled the House and the Senate, I think, in 93, 94. I think we lost the House then. Yeah, I'm not going to say that the whole problem is on the Democrats. I'm just saying the problem has been greatly exacerbated since 2003, which when Blagojevich skipped payments, borrowed money to make payments, you know, you look at the solution, it was under an Edgar administration when we came up with a plan to be at 90% funding in 2045. And the past couple administrations haven't been putting the money in. And you know, you can't go and have an all-kids program and then not fund pensions. And that's basically what Blagojevich did. You have to buckle down and make some hard choices, and it seems like making hard choices is pretty hard for the other side to do.
Let's talk about the pension problem, because this is the other big thing that has to be dealt with. I think everybody admits that. Maybe not everybody is agreed on what to do, but everybody is agreed that it's a huge problem, and that the governor said that he wants to make pension reform the thing that's at the top of his agenda. So what do we do?
Well, first of all, you have to bring all the parties together, and without doing that, I don't know that you can come up with a legitimate answer. But I think you have to, eventually it will be increased employees will be paying more, and probably the benefits will be less, and I don't see any other way to get around that.
Well, are there things that you think are in terms of the kind of changes that people are talking about? Employees getting less, or people having to pay more in the system,
or
having to bear part of medical cost, or dealing some with the cost of living increases, or possibly even for the state of Illinois to start taxing the benefit. Any and all of that?
Well, certainly taxing retirement income would be a last resort, I think, and I'm not abdicating that. I want to make sure everyone knows that. But I think you have to consider everything. But I think Quinn and Madigan had a proposal, or maybe it was Madigan's, about shifting the burden of the pensions onto the school districts and into the universities. I think that's not acceptable at this time. I think when we aren't providing our local school districts with the money that we promised them, and in our area, transportation is huge. Little rural school districts spend a lot of money on transportation. And Cisna Park School District just recently announced that next year they're not going to provide transportation to extracurricular activities simply because the state has not lived up to the promise of providing the money that they should. We mandate as a state that they have to provide transportation, and then we don't cover the cost. So when we do that, it hurts. You can't make a budget you make a budget, and when the revenue doesn't come then it just throws everything off.
Do you think that it's likely, that anything dramatic in terms of pension reform will happen before the election. I mean, and I'm not talking about the primary. I'm talking about the general election in the fall.
Well, I think definitely not before the primary. I think when you look at a lot of the Democratic races, the primary is the election. Mm-hmm. So until they get by the primary, Republicans are not competitive in a lot of the areas the way this map was drawn. So once they get by the primary, then they're home free, and they probably would be more interested in looking at something like this. But realistically, probably not before after the election.
Our guest, again, in this hour of focus is Shane Coulter. He's a member of the Illinois State Senate. He is going to be running in the primary to have the Republican Party spot in the new 53rd Senate District. And questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can watch on our website. That's will.illinois.edu. Of course, people are listening, WYLL AM. You can call in. You can send us an email if you like. It's will-talk@illinois.edu. One of the things that I think that concern a lot of folks is the business climate of the state and how it can be improved. What do you think could be done to try to either attract more business or to get businesses that are here already to employ more people?
Well, Illinois is certainly not known for its business climate. And I think it you can start with workers' compensation. Our unemployment insurance is higher than some other states. Regulation, you know, we overregulate. I think it goes to EPA and it's right on down to the fire marshal. It seems like when you start inspecting elevators at churches, you know, just the little things that go up where the chair lifts and things, I had a church in Piper City said they aren't going to use their chairlift anymore because they can't afford to have somebody come inspect it. They not only pay for the person that comes and keeps the things running, mm-hmm. then they have to pay for somebody come from Peoria or Chicago to inspect it, and it costs them as much money to get the thing inspected as what it does to have the thing serviced. And they said, you know what, we are a small congregation, we're not going to use our chairlift anymore. And it's regulations like that that don't make any sense, that hurt consumers, that hurt the public. And in Illinois, it's just piles them high and deep on the backs of business and its citizens. And you start with the EPA. It's the worst. When you want to cite something in Illinois, EPA, and the people are understaffed, but the rules need to be rewritten. Things, there has to be a relationship to the cost of remediating a problem as to what that problem really would cause. And right now, I don't think there is any. You just spend lots of money on something. For like instance, asbestos tile that's in some of the older buildings. You know, it's not a huge, huge problem, but yet to get rid of it, it can be a huge cost and something that's that the public has to bear and business has to bear, that there's no relationship between the cost of remediation and fixing the problem or the potential hazard that is there. So, what costs to do business here is higher than it should be if you just look at prevailing wage in Illinois. You know, how could we save our school districts a lot of money if we exempted them from prevailing wage on repairs? There's so many ways we could save money in this state when we expand prevailing wage. Historically, prevailing wage has been for on-the-job work. Recently, we've expanded it to off-site. We've expanded it to the haulers of gravel, so when they go pick up in the pits, they're on prevailing wage, and it's, you know, we just keep expanding it. We keep costs of doing business. So, you know, everything we do in Illinois, it costs more and more, but just by simply the rules and that we're doing in Springfield.
Let's take another caller here. We have someone here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. Mr. Coulter, I found your newspaper articles interesting, published in the Lone Tree Leader in Onarga. I'd like to ask you about the Medicaid program. There was an interesting article in the News Gazette Sunday morning. I hope you will read it if you haven't already. But it's about Medicaid, and Medicaid is the state's most costly program, $14 billion a year. And two recent reforms were rules that required applicants to show they were residents of Illinois and had an income low enough to meet eligibility rules. And then it says the Obama administration notified Illinois that the state's new rules about residency and financial eligibility violated the requirements established in Obamacare. One more excerpt from it. Millions more will come on the Medicaid rolls when Obamacare is fully implemented. And at $14 billion a year, Illinois simply cannot afford this to take on millions more in Medicaid. I wonder why there is no civil suit or judicial process to prevent the further deterioration of our financial situation here in Illinois when millions more will come on the eligibility for Medicaid.
Well, first of all, I think in the Quinn's budget, he's saying he's going to cut Medicaid $2.7 billion, but this is at the same time that he's saying he wants to add 100,000 more from the Chicago area and put them on Medicaid. So it's kind of hard to figure out which way he's really going. But as far as the article that you mentioned, the Quinn administration could have asked for clarification on that. They could have asked for a waiver, and I think basically they hadn't done anything up until recently to go ahead and enact the law, which was passed by the General Assembly with bipartisan support, I might add. But you're right, the Obama administration didn't want us to change the way we looked at eligibility through income. All that bill did was saying we want to look at a wider period. Right now, you just take in one pay stub. We're saying we'd like to look at a couple months' income to verify that you really are eligible. The Obama administration didn't want to allow that, but I think I heard recently that we're going to go ahead and implement those new changes anyway.
Can you really, we're talking about a really big program here, and can you really achieve the kind of savings that you have to do simply by either changing the income level or getting rid of people? And you know, there may indeed be some people who are committing fraud that shouldn't be eligible, shouldn't be receiving benefits at all. But if you just take a look at that, can you really achieve the kind of savings that we're talking about here?
No, you can't, but it's a start. In every little savings, it all adds up. I think, Illinois lags behind the rest of the nation as far as moving people into managed care. And that can be a savings. When you have someone that's visiting the emergency room, if they were in a managed care program, where they could get the same service provided elsewhere at a much lower cost. I think it merits that we have a copay. Right now, if someone has insurance and they have Medicaid, they want to go and use Medicaid because there's no copay. It costs them nothing to show up to the doctor's office. The state picks up the whole bill. So I think if they have a link card or whatever, I think if they show up and if it costs them something, they may think up twice about using the service and be a little more judicial in the use of those services, where now they can go whenever they want and it costs absolutely nothing to them.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Shane Coulter. He's an Illinois state senator, and we'll talk some more with him after a very short break. This is Focus.
Wake up and live. Don't mind the rainy patter, and you will find it's mind over matter. Dark clouds will break up if you just wake up and live.
It took a long time for Catherine Russell to go from backup singer to solo performer, but we're lucky she finally did. On the next Fresh Air, Russell performs songs from her new album. Join us.
Come out of your shell.
this afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Effingham Performance Center, presenting Leo Kottke on February 25th. The 6 and 12-string fingerstyle guitarist performs folk, blues, and jazz solo acoustic. Leo Kottke performance and ticket information is available at the-epc.org.
And this is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you listening on WILL AM, or maybe you're watching through our website. We are webcasting this morning. You can see us by going to WILL.illinois.edu. On the program tomorrow, we will be talking in the first hour of the show about the history of the British invasion of Afghanistan. Diana Preston will be our guest. She's an historian. We'll talk about her book that she's written that's titled The Dark Defile. And then we'll talk about why people lie with Robert Trivers in the second hour. He's an anthropologist. He's written a book entitled The Folly of Fools, The Logic of Deceit and Self-Deception in Human Life. I also do want to mention that Governor Pat Quinn will be giving his budget address tomorrow, and we will be airing this live beginning at noon here on AM 580. So this is, we have some hints on what the governor is going to be presenting, but we don't know for certain. We will know tomorrow. So from that point forward, we'll be able to get a better reaction from some of the people that we'll be talking to on the show. I do also want to mention that we will have indeed some reaction to the governor's proposals and to talk generally about the state budget on the program Thursday at 11 o'clock. Fred Gertz, who is a professor of economics here at the U of I and is also involved with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, will be here. Also, Robert Rich, who's director of the Institute. It's based on the campus of the University of Illinois. So we'll have some more talk about these, the same things that we're talking about here this morning. We're here weekday mornings, 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. We welcome your questions and comments. You can follow us on Twitter, Will Public Media. You can find us on Facebook. You can go to the webpage and look at the schedule, find out what we'll do in the days ahead. That's will.illinois.edu. This morning, we're talking with a candidate for the state Senate. He, in fact, is currently a member of the state Senate. Shane Cultra is his name. He's a Republican seeking his party's spot on the ballot in the new 53rd district of the Illinois State Senate. He currently represents the 53rd, so that's the old 53rd. He's running in the new 53rd. His opponent in the primary next month is State Representative Jason Berrickman. He was here on the show last week. That's on our website, archived there if you want to hear it. And here on the program, questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit earlier about business climate issues. You did touch on workers' comp. There have been some changes dealing with some the issues that employers have been concerned about. Is there more you think that has to be done on workers' comp?
Oh, well, we didn't just scratch the surface on workers' comp. Basically, the bill that was passed last year just decreased the payments to the doctors for different services rendered. It really didn't get at the root cause of the worker comp problem in Illinois, and that is getting hurt at work. You know, you'd think workers' comp, it's a no-brainer that it would require then. You have to have proof that you got hurt at work. Well, it really isn't, and that's the whole problem. You have to have causation in a workers' comp bill, or it's not going to cut the cost where it should be, where we'd be in line with some of our neighbors like Indiana, even Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri. They all their workers' comp rates are much lower than Illinois.
Recently, Indiana became a right-to-work state. Do you think Illinois should do the same?
Well, you know, right-to-work, I mean, it seems like the American way. If you want to work at some place, should you have to join a union? And in Illinois, the answer is yes. You know, I think you should have a choice, but there again, the majority speaks, and we're a closed shop. Where if there's a union and you want to work at a place, you have to join the union. I think what we've done in the last few years, as far as municipalities, used to be you had to have 30 full-time employees to be unionized. The law has been changed all on partisan vote, where you only have to have 5 full-time employees now to have a union, And it used to be you used to have to have an election. Well, we have card check in Illinois now, so you got five employees, you get three of them to sign a card saying they want a union, and you have a union without a vote. So, I think that's a step backwards for this country and this state. I think, what's wrong with having a vote? And I'm disappointed in the direction that we've moved, but that's the way it is here in Illinois until things are different in Springfield. That's the way it will continue.
What do you do if you have a major employer comes to the state of Illinois and says, if you don't do something for us, we're going to leave? This just happen recently.
Well, I think you look at Chicago Mercantile Exchange. They're the largest taxpayer in the state of Illinois. And over the years, the way they collect their money is different. It's all electronic now. It's all run through Chicago. So you can have someone in China and in Japan having a transaction. It's run through Chicago, and it was counted against it as for their tax liability here in Illinois, which is wrong. So, I mean, the Chicago Mercantile had a legitimate excuse. I mean, they had a legitimate cause for complaint. And then when the state, the Democratic leaders and lame duck pushed through a 67% tax hike, that just exasperated the problem that was already there. And the Mercantile said, look, we're paying taxes on transactions that we shouldn't have to be paying transactions on. And they're right. They were. So something needed to be done. I didn't like the way they did it through legislation. I think it should have been handled through the Department of Revenue and the tax code, but they chose legislation. And I actually voted for it. My opponent didn't vote for it. And the reason I voted for it really mainly was other things that were in that bill, and that was in our area. This is a huge agricultural district, the 53rd is. In that bill also was inheritance tax exemption increase. Right now, or in the last year, it was a $2 million limit thanks to the passage of this bill. Today it's $3.5 million exemption, and next year it'll be $4 million. When farm ground is selling for $8,000 to $12,000 an acre, I think that's something that needed to be done, especially when the federal government limit is $5 million. Also, in that bill was ethanol and biodiesel tax credit extension for another 5 years. That's another reason I supported that bill. Research and development tax credit was in that bill, something that Caterpillar desperately needs. I mean, they just are building a new plant. They're not building in Illinois. When you take away their research and development tax credit, they don't know if they're going to get it from 1 year to the next. What kind of business climate is that? You know, what signal does that send for investors around the world? Are they going to come to Illinois when they don't know what the policies are going to be? Even loss carryforward was in that bill. Do you realize when the Democrats increased taxes 67%. They took away every business legitimate, which has been historic for years, the ability to carry a loss forward. You have a bad year, you can take some of that loss and bring it into the next year where you might have a profit to deduct it. Well, they did away with that, but it's now reinstated thanks to that bill. So what happened is you had the Democrats. They wanted to keep Chicago Mercantile there. They need some of their members didn't like supporting a large corporation, so they needed some Republicans. So they added some things that Republicans wanted, some things that were good for people in this district. That's how you build correlations. That's how you show leadership. That's how you work together in Springfield. You give them something that they want. You give us something the way they want, that we want, and you pass the bill. And it's an imperfect bill, but that's the way that things work. But I voted for it because I felt it was very important things that I just mentioned for my district.
We have a couple of emails I want to make sure I get in. We have another caller. We'll try to do our best to get everybody in. We have a couple questions come in by email that have to do with the pension issue, so we'll go back to that for a bit. Someone wants to know, how do you, if you're talking about making changes for current employees, the problem is that the state constitution says that the state cannot reduce or diminish benefits.
And I agree with that. So anything that anybody's earned is locked in. Anybody that's retired, whatever you're getting, it's locked in. And I wouldn't even think about trying to change that. What we're talking about is the future. Any current employee, the benefit they haven't earned in the future, I think probably that's subject to change. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't claim to be one or have any insight on that. That will probably have to be determined by the courts. But I think, you know, anything that's been earned, I don't even consider trying to change. But it's only like current employees. Whenever an agreement is made, it's going forward that we'd be talking about.
So that, but that then that the state would, if we talked about some other things, we talked about having employees pay for their health care, talked about the possibility of taxing the benefit, which you said you would not, you would keep that as a last resort.
Exactly.
And there
the very last resort.
The very last resort. So those are perhaps modifying the cost of living increase. There would be nothing to prevent the state from doing any of those things.
Well, I would not support anything that would change anything from what people have earned.
Okay, so you're so you would, for those people who are in the system now, you would not change.
No, I wouldn't change anything they've earned up to now.
Okay,
right, but going forward, you know, whenever the deal is made, and I'm not saying I'm saying bring everybody together. Let's everybody talk about this and come up with some solutions. In the past, that hasn't been done. There's supposed to be a group that's working on this. I don't know whether they've met over the summer or not. Hopefully, they have. I know that Bill Brady is one of the members. I think that's on that group from the Senate Republicans. And they're going to try to come up with some solutions, some way to save some money. It's not like we have an option. The system cannot sustain itself. The payments are going to be so high, it's going to take all the dollars away from education. We have a huge Medicaid problem. You put Medicaid and pensions together, if something isn't done, there's just simply you can't run state government without doing something. So it's not like, you know, you know, do we want to do something? We have to do something. You know, our back's against the wall. So let's all get together. Let's come up with something. And I'm not laying the blame on anybody. There are pension payments that weren't made in the past, but that doesn't help us. And the blame on what happened in the past doesn't get us to where we need to be. So I think everybody wants to come up with and make sure the pension is solid, that when you retire you have your pension, that you can look forward to it and rely on it. And that's what I want. And so let's get together and let's fix it.
Somebody here wants to know why is it that in all this conversation about pension reform and the problem of pensions that the pensions of politicians are not included in the budget saving discussions? The person writes, state employees are always on the chopping block. Our elected officials should not be exempt.
And I think, you know, what's done in the past, it affected our pensions, too. The pension reform law that was passed last year for new hires, it also changed the pension for the General Assembly. You know, I'm perfectly willing. You know, I think we should be a part-time legislature. I think we meet once a year, do a two-year budget, and get out. I think we, you know, I'd be for that. I don't, you know. So any changes in the pension would include the legislators. What it hasn't included is the judges. That's the only one that's been left out. Mm. And I think, frankly, since the judges will be ruling on whether, you know, they figure there'll be a lawsuit, whatever's done, if you included the judges, then you got a real problem on who in the world is going to hear the case.
Let's take a caller. Philo is the caller here, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
I wanted to, first of all, say that I appreciate his comments about collaborating over all of these issues. But along the lines of that collaboration, he's made mention of the fact that we're dealing in a global economy. And frankly, this business of states having different rules winds up being a race to the bottom where the states cannibalize each other's employers. And this is perhaps the biggest reason why I favor having this health care program because having standardized rules for employers across the nation seems to me to be the only way that we can compete fairly. Without that, you do lose your businesses to a state that's willing to provide the worst case scenario for the citizens. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, you respond to that however you like.
Well, it just seems like to me government regulation, one thing it does not fit everybody. And I think you should leave it up to businesses. If some businesses want to have a better plan to attract employees, I think they should be able to do that, to try to set a national standard for every business. I'm a little hesitant to want to do that.
Somebody here, again, this is a question that came in by email. We'd like you to talk about various gambling expansion proposals under consideration in Springfield and what your position is generally on that.
Well, generally, I'm opposed to gambling. I don't even buy lottery tickets. I just feel like, for me, it's wrong. There are many studies that you can look at, and for every dollar in gambling revenue the state takes in, there are studies that show that it costs up to $3 in social service costs for the problems that it causes. Gambling is not reliable revenue, and a lot of the people that gamble shouldn't be gambling. So you're taking money away from people that can't afford to lose their money. And I know there's some places like Danville where they've had some real problems with employment, and they're looking for a casino, and they think it would be, good for their area economically. And I think early on it shows that, when you open up a casino or something, I think there is some positive aspects to employment. But I think in the long run, it hurts more than it helps.
Back at the beginning, we talked about I mentioned the fact that it is said that the governor is going to call for a 9% cut in almost everything, almost all areas of government. One of his exceptions is education. The state board has called for a 3.9% increase in funding for fiscal 13 over this year. Now, the governor, apparently, he's going to talk about a 1%. Do you see the possibility of any increase at all?
Well, what do you call an increase? He's not funding what we're supposed to be funding now, so how can you say you're going to give him an increase? And I go back to transportation dollars that really hurt the school districts in my area because they're rural and they have to spend a lot of money on busing kids into schools. Now, how in the world can you realistically tell them you're going to give them an increase in education when you're not even funding transportation? When Cisna Park School District is going to cut transportation for extracurricular activities. How can you say we're going to increase funding? Not even funding what you're supposed to be funding now. I think it's it's ludicrous for him to even say that. Where's the money coming from?
What did you think when he talked about the possibility of saving money by encouraging districts to consolidate?
Well, I mean that you can. You want districts to consolidate, and then you don't fund the transportation. When you consolidate districts, it increases the transportation costs. Mm-hmm. So, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. I will never be for forced consolidation. I think it has to be something that the school districts want to do on their own, the voters in that district. I mean, I live in a consolidated school district, and I know how it affects the communities when you lose your school. And, a lot of small communities, life in that community revolves around the school. And when that school's gone, it hurts the communities. And so when you're talking about forced consolidation, I will fight that with every breath that I have. And when the governor talks about increasing education funding, that's great. But get real when he doesn't live up to what we're promised to provide now.
What do you think about the legislative scholarships? Should they continue or should we get rid of those?
I'm not giving them out, and every time I've been able to vote on that, I've voted against doing away with them.
All right. So you don't give them out, but you don't think that they should be abolished?
No, I voted to abolish them every time.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I understand that I heard you correct. So you said you have voted every time it's come up, you voted, let's get rid of this, and you don't give them out yourself.
I've been in the legislature for 10 years, and any time it ever came up for a vote, I voted to do away with them.
All right. You think that that's likely that that'll happen, that they will go away?
It's up to the Democrats. I think as a Republican caucus in the Senate, there's no Senate Republicans that are giving out scholarships. We're in unison against them. But there again, we're in the minority, and as long as the Democrats want to give them out, they can override us anytime they want.
What about a ban on cell phone use while people are driving?
I think government just intrudes in people's lives too much now, and I don't recommend using a cell phone. I don't like to use a cell phone when I'm driving down the road. I definitely can't text. I think it's dangerous, but I don't think it's something that we have to, that we can mandate as a state government. You know, how do you enforce something like that? I think technology hopefully will catch up with that, where you can have a hands-free operation. And I think some of it's available now. I think new technology will be available maybe, and that won't be as big a problem as what it is today.
Should people in Illinois be able to carry concealed firearms?
Most definitely. We're the only state in the nation that doesn't have it, but yet what do we hear from Rahm Emanuel? He wants to register all handguns.
So you certainly would not, if something like that came before the legislature, you would not vote for it.
I definitely would not vote for it. I have been a strong supporter of the Second Amendment rights in my area. Lots of people love to hunt and have guns, and you know what? Having a gun is a good thing, and police can't respond. They can't be there on the minute. But when the bad people know you got a gun, they stay away.
The governor has proposed an end to the state's tax on natural gas. $159 million came in last year, apparently, from that. It's estimated it could save people $35-40 bucks a year on their heating bills. Would you vote for that?
Well, I'm certainly thinking about it. We'll see what the bill looks like. Right now we have a spending problem, and we'll see what his whole package is what he's planning on doing. I mean, he's talking about getting rid of some loopholes. I want to see what all his loopholes are, and you know, you can, if you want to call the natural gas tax, getting rid of that, and then doing away with some loophole. I want to see what he's talking about in specifics to know really what I'm going to support. Anytime you can lower taxes, it's a good thing, I think. But you have to be realistic in the environment right now in which we live in. You know, if you're going to do away with some taxes, then you have to do away with some spending, and I want to see what he's got in mind.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that because we're here at the end of the time. We have been talking this morning with Illinois State Senator Shane Cultra. He's a Republican seeking his party's spot on the ballot in the new 53rd District in the Illinois State Senate. He is currently a member of the Illinois State Senate. His opponent in the primary, Jason Berrickman, he was on the show last week. All of these programs we're doing with the candidates will be archived on our website so that you can go right there and listen to them again anytime that you like. That's WILL.illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.